History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to ask a few questions and then patiently listen as memories that may have been buried for decades are brought back to the surface. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from men and women who put their lives on the line for the rest of us. This coming Tuesday, March 29th, is National Vietnam War Veterans Day. You may not have heard about that. It's a relatively new designation, less than a decade old, but they're very well could be an event or ceremony near you that you'll have a chance to attend or contribute to. Even if there isn't, it's a chance for you to thank the Vietnam veterans in your life. We're going to return to our World War II focus here on Hometown Heroes next week, but in honor of Vietnam Veterans Day this week, we're going to hear from one man and one woman who served there in very different roles. Before I get to that, if you happen to live near me in California, and I know quite a few of you do, there's going to be a very special National Vietnam War Veterans Day event in Clovis, California at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District starting at 9 a.m. Tuesday. The keynote speaker is Medal of Honor recipient Jim McLuhan, who was awarded our nation's highest military decoration for running 100 meters through a hail of bullets to reach a wounded soldier, then carry that soldier on his shoulder all the way back to his company, saving his life. I'm hoping to be there Tuesday to hear his story, and maybe you can join us. That's Tuesday, March 29th, 9 a.m. at the Clovis Veterans Memorial District in Clovis, California. That is quite a ways from where I met the veterans you're going to hear from today. These interviews were recorded at VFW Post 10147 in Apopka, Florida. I had the privilege of meeting several veterans there thanks to one of their leaders, Loretta Forlaw, a close friend of my mother's from their time together as Army nurses. You'll hear from Colonel Forlaw in a bit, but first, 84-year-old Ken Yeager. He would eventually serve 12 years in the Navy, 12 more in the Army, including some unique aerial duty in Vietnam. He grew up in Florida and later California thanks to his father's military journey.
My father being in the Coast Guard, I just hung out at the chief's mess. He was the chief petty officer at that point in time. Mm-hmm. They allowed me to run around on the Coast Guard air station, just picking up things and trying to be helpful, that type of thing. Just staying out of the way as much as anything, probably. I don't know. But that's what I did as a youngster. My father was a pilot. He flew, I was born in Pensacola. He was going to flight school as an enlisted man. And so he was an enlisted pilot. And then later on, he just dropped out of the flying business. He flew as a career as a bombardier navigator with PBMs, PBYs for a while. But decided his main thing was repair. He was a senior repairman. That's all there was to it. I just did two tours at Sanford. He was the engineering officer at a lot of places where we were stationed.
So you mentioned him flying. Did that spark an aviation bug for you at an early age? Is that something you were interested in?
Yeah, he took me up flying as a youngster. I was probably 8 years, 9 years, 10 years old, and he took me up flying, showed me how to do it, let me play, handle the controls, whatnot. I said, no, it's no big deal. Any idiot can do this.
Yeah. I'll have to get more perspective on that from you later. So you would have been a child during World War II. Was your father deployed?
He was Coast Guard. He was deployed as far as San Diego, remember Massachusetts. stateside. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did one tour in the Western Pacific, but it was during peacetime. It wasn't wartime. Whatnot. He did a tour, I remember, up in Alaska, Adak, Alaska. Mm-hmm. Decided I didn't want to be in the Coast Guard. Yeah, but he advised going in the Navy or Army if I wanted to go in the services. He says larger units, promotions are faster than the Coast Guard, and duty's probably a little bit better, more spaced out, that type of thing. And he was right.
So I spent a lot of time talking to guys who were serving during World War II, but there are so many other things going on. You know, the home front was very active, and I've heard a lot of those stories. I'm curious for you, do you have memories from those years as a boy of how it changed your life or what kinds of things were memorable?
Yeah, I remember going spending a weekend with him on the Coast Guard air station, but that was not a combat situation. This is actually peacetime. I was just phased into going into the ROTC when I was in high school without even thinking about it. And then later on, wanted to go full-time, so I enlisted in the Navy. I went to submarine school up at Hunters Point, California. Graduated from that. The hardest part about that was learning to use the escape mechanism. It's a, what they call a Mommsen lung. You strap it on, you charge it, get it wet, you're in the water, you're underwater, and shoot up the tower. Continue breathing out there, because as you go up, you're under high pressure in the air you've taken in. As you go up through the tube, your system expands, and the air has to have some place to go, so you have to keep breathing outward as you go up the tube. And that was part of the practice for submariners. I stayed in the submarines. I was on one for a little while, and then when I decided to go on active duty, I decided I didn't particularly want to play in a submarine service. So my father said, well, you want to go in whatever service you want. It's your career. So I talked to some friends, previous military people, and decided that the promotions were slow and duty is the best in the Army. And I, as it turned out, it was probably right. A lot of different places, a lot of different people, things to do. You make your way is what it comes down to.
And what year did you go into the Navy to begin with?
That would have been 1955.
And when you were talking about that training, that exercise, coming to the surface, what happens if you don't do it right?
Well, your lungs would expand, and it would kill you, probably. Mm-hmm. No probably about it. No, you're trained. You knew the situation, whatnot. You just, that's why they had the training tube, the training facility at San Francisco, Hunters Point, San Francisco. And you go through the whole submarine school, learn all about it, taking things down, putting them apart, emergency situations, how to handle them, that type of thing.
And what was the submarine you were on?
USS Redfish, SS 395 out of San Diego. I was in that as a reservist. I made a couple of tours during the summer, that type of thing. I looked around and talked to different people. I decided when I went on active duty, I didn't want to go on the Coast Guard or the Navy. I decided to go to Army. I guess I was tired of the water.
So how'd that work out for you?
It did pretty well. One of the things, I got caught with Agent Orange in Vietnam, and it cost me my prostate and my gallbladder. But the worst thing is my short-term memory is bad. Long-term is pretty good, but the short-term isn't worth a flip. But I've got my memory bank over here.
She walked over that way.
Yeah. I'll remember things and relate them to her, and she'll pack them away. And then if it comes up later, she can talk on it fairly intelligently.
So what were you flying over there?
Bird dogs. Liaison-type aircraft. Piper Cub is what you would look at it and see. I think it looks like. Low-level reconnaissance, that's 12 to 20, 25 feet off the ground. You're looking for small emplacements, stragglers, people coming in from the north, an NVA coming in, doing spying, setting up explosion points that when some of our troops or people would be moving through would cause damage, kill people, and whatnot. You learn to look for that stuff, and it was pretty simple, really. So we never got caught in it, and I was always able to check it with the group I was leading and go around it and not have anyone get hurt. Thank goodness.
Well, that sounds like you're beating some odds, because at that low level, there are all kinds of dangers that you're under, and then it's not like you have a whole lot of defenses, do you?
No. The only defense was a good set of eyeballs and some buddies on each side doing the same thing. That's when you're going through the jungles. That wasn't the full-time job. The full-time job really was flying, doing low-level reconnaissance, flying a burn dog 10, 15, 25 feet off the ground, flying through jungle, what you want to call a semi-jungle area in South Vietnam. And people say, oh, you can't do it. Can you do that? It's not as hazardous as it sounds. You know what to look for. You can see the wide spots, but you know, you don't fly through and get yourself in danger. That's stupid.
So you never got shot at?
Like to say, I got shot at, missed, and otherwise and hit. That Agent Orange did a job in my memory.
Were there some results of some of those recon missions, things that you guys were able to discover that proved to be strategically important?
Yeah, there were a lot of VC emplacements, small marine facilities, 3 and 4 man crews, whatnot. And when some of our aircraft, like flying low level even, they'd try and shoot out, but usually flow level. I always flew 25 feet off the ground. I'm going by so fast at that level that they don't have time to get on you. If you're flying, most of the search stuff flies a lot higher than that, and they're able to lock onto them for a short period of time and do some damage if the guy's not aware of it. I knew a very few that were shot down by ground crew over there in Vietnam, and I would have seen them flying around. Most they were pretty sharp guys.
How long were you over there?
It was a full year tour.
Did you have some rescue missions that you flew?
A couple where I was involved in. One crew, there was a crew that carried machine guns, whatnot, set up out in the boondocks. And I happened to fly over and notice them that they were having problems. A bunch of VC were coming down, whatnot. So I just called artillery from the New Jersey, and they just dropped some shells in, and they were gone. And the rest of them they went back north as soon as they could. As far as I could tell, the guys that we had on the ground weren't hurt. Because artillery stayed wide of them, and that was the only real big action that I saw. You talk about shells; I could see them go by. They were that big, and at that that weight with the power that comes out of the New Jersey, pushing these things, you'd think, well, it's like that. It wasn't like that. I could actually see it. It's hard to believe when people say, oh, you've got to be kidding me. No, But most of my flying in the Army was low-level reconnaissance and some helicopter work, but most of beer dog for me.
You came down in a helicopter and got hurt?
Oh, yeah, trying to get a couple of guys out that were in a foxhole and sort of pinned down with VC. I hit him with a little bit of gunfire and chased the VC off and then went on there. But I was so level that one of my skids caught a tree that I hadn't seen, whatnot, and dropped me into the ground, whatnot. And a little damage to my right knee, whatnot, but I'm okay. I walked out.
You make that sound real simple, like everybody just let you walk out of there, or you knew you weren't going to get shot walking out of there.
I was in contact with the people who were monitoring me, the mission control, what it comes down to. And some of the stuff I did a fire mission for the New Jersey. They sent an observer in from the battleship and took him out. They had some specific areas that they wanted to drop weapons on, and that would high intensity stuff. It just makes a big mess when you see the shells land. The shells are 16-inch shells, and you could actually see them go by. It was interesting. And, of course, it shook the aircraft like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it almost puts you upside down. It's that violent.
And when you were flying the helicopters, was that a Huey, or what were you flying?
I flew a Huey's, yes. Yeah. And there was some little bit larger stuff, but that was just for carrying stuff around. But, yeah, mostly it's Huey's and some H-13.
I mean, we just talked about a couple situations that I think most of us would consider close calls or hairy situations, things that would make us a little anxious or nervous or scared. Are there some moments that you think back on sometimes and say, yeah, that was really difficult, I don't know how I got through that?
Well, I remember flying through some of the jungle area in South Vietnam that it was really pretty stiff stuff. You had to be careful flying through that stuff. And you come out in a wide area that's fairly sparse, and all of a sudden, there's a hole down here with a couple of VC machine guns in it. And you're out of the jungle and right over the top of them, and they're shooting. And all I do is pull a grenade and throw it out, and I'm gone. I carried hand grenades on the side and whatnot. I'd pull a pin and drop it out. But that was sort of a tricky situation. I've told that, hey, you really shouldn't be doing that. If it ever went off in the aircraft, yeah, we know. But you did what you had to do. The only other thing I had was six rockets in the wings. If I was flying a bird dog, right. Yeah, that was it.
You know, you mentioned Agent Orange and how that's affected you. When did you first become aware that that was an issue?
I think when I came back on a vacation one time, came out, I got leave, came back and started coughing. I think that's what it was. that type of thing. And then memory loss. I started losing the memory and went to the doctor, and they did a whole bunch of research on me. And it was one of the Navy facilities that was doing the research on my head early on to find out what was wrong with my memory and whatnot.
You remember seeing them spray or knowing that it was there around you?
I knew it was there. They told us it was being sprayed daily.
What was the favorite aircraft that you ever flew?
I guess I have to say the bird dog. I flew more time, and that was a lot of my combat time was in the bird dog. I've flown almost a little bit everything over the years, the twins, helicopters, fixed wing, rotary, both qualified test pilot, almost all of them. And right now it's hard walking a straight line down the street. And I'm still sober. Only thing, I've never flown a jet. I think that would be fun.
Yeah. You drove race cars?
Oh, I started racing when I was almost in high school, yeah, with sports cars. I was in a sports car club in high school, both the wife and I, and she was my pit crew, among other things, when I was racing. We're SCCA, many years.
What's a bigger thrill for you, racing on a track or Being in the cockpit.
Being in the cockpit, yeah. There's a little bit more to it, yeah. Especially flying a bird dog 10 to 25 feet off the ground looking for VC. You're on your toes. Yeah. And you're flying through jungle area. Never know it's going to bit right over the next rise. It keeps you on your toes, but someone had to do it. Had to be done because you had ground troops following you, and you wanted to make sure it was fairly safe for them. So you were, what you do is you nosed out the little machine pits that were sitting around here and there waiting to get our troops. You sort of pushed them out of the way.
Is there something, when you think back on all your time in the service, is there something that you would say that you're most proud of?
I guess the Vietnam situation, being able to handle it safely and help a lot of other people out too on the ground.
Well, if there's anything else you want to say, feel free, but I just want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country and thank you for sharing your story.
Very welcome. That's a good career for any youngster that wants to go in the service. Even if he doesn't want to stay, it's a good solid base for any particular job he wants to go into.
And how long have you been part of the post here in Apopka?
Since 06.
What do you get out of coming down here and meeting all these other veterans? What does it do for you?
The bunch of buddies have been through the same situation, and they're all friendly. One big happy family is what we are, really. Most of everybody's been through the same type of situation. If not, it's not too far removed.
And we'll hear from one of Ken's VFW friends when we come back. If you visit hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, you'll find a photo of Ken and his wife of 66 years, Nancy. Together, they spent decades organizing ROTC awards for Florida students, passing on their military pride to future generations. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.